2022 Death Holler brought us Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always, my co-host, La Urena, and we're rounding it out with the last good Romero movie, Land of the Dead from 2005. Tagline, the dead shall inherit the earth. What do you think about that one?
The dead shall inherit the earth. Yeah, I like it.
It's got a good biblical tone to it, so it works.
Yeah.
Directed and written by George A. Romero, music by Reinhold Howell and Johnny Klimek, made for a budget of $16 million and only made $47 million at the box office.
I mean, it's double, it's not triple, but it's double plus.
It's double plus. It probably still made money even with, if you count for like advertising, that's good. It should have made more. It kind of stinks that it didn't. I don't really know. And it was right when the zombie renaissance back in the early 2000s really kicked off. So I don't know why it didn't do better than it did, but
yeah.
It's gotten more fans as years went on, like more people warmed up to it. I think they were expecting another Dawn of the Dead or Day of the Dead, depending upon which one you fall on. And this is a different movie. It really is.
Yeah.
We have Simon Baker playing Riley Denbo, the tired protagonist who's looking for a new start somewhere up north, probably Canada. Politics, folks. We'll get into them. But he was the main star in the Mentalist TV series. He was also in the movie The Devil Wears Prada, and he starred in The Ring too. So there you go. The American version, obviously. John Leguizamo, plays Cholo Demora, willing to do what it takes to become one of the elites. I say boo because I don't know if anybody's actually kept up with John Leguizamo, but he is such a whiny bitch.
Oh, my God, like, he's a crybaby, yeah.
Anytime that there's a character, like, for instance, Super Mario Brothers, that's one of the movies he was in, a Latin, you know, man, Latino, was cast as a role for Luigi, who's obviously Italian in Super Mario lore. He did not thank anybody for the fact that he got a chance to play that character.
No,
what this man did was, when he heard Charlie Day was cast as the voice actor for Luigi in the new Super Mario Brothers cartoon movie from Universal, he threw an absolute fucking fit and said that job should have went to another Latinx person. Now, he did not say Latino, I want that to be stressed to all of our Latin friends out there, like Urena herself.
Yes.
He said Latinx. How do you feel about that term as a Latina yourself?
I don't know if I sent you the TikTok where, God, what's the actor's name? The one who played Deuce Bigelow?
Rob
Schneider.
Schneider, yeah.
He was like, Latinx. He's like, no Latin person gives a shit about that. And I'm sorry, as a Latina, I do not. Now, does that mean that I don't care for, you know, fellow Latinos, notice I said that maybe feel differently, you know, have a different lifestyle? Absolutely not. I don't care. I don't want to be in your business, and I don't want your business up in my stuff either, unless we're super close friends and you feel the need to discuss that with me. And that being said, no, I don't, we don't care to be inclusive like that. Majority of us do not. I am so sorry to say it. It's just how it is.
So I just find it funny. He not only said Latinx, which is very divisive amongst the, you know, Latino community, but he threw out there that Luigi, an Italian American character, should have been played by a Latino.
If he was going to argue that, no, it does not go back to the Latin community at all. It does. It goes to an Italian if you're going to complain about that. John Leguizamo is the type of person that I feel like he would argue about the new Snow White movie that, you know, that should have gone, you know, one of those characters should have been a Latin character in terms of the dwarves. Well,
actually it was. I mean, Snow White herself is played by a Latina.
I'm talking about the dwarves, but then not even care that maybe it should actually go to people who are little people that can not only work that, but like, deserve it because they are actually short people. They are technically dwarves.
You can thank, and I don't remember what his name is now, the actor from Game of Thrones, the little person actor that's in those movies. Yes, anyways, you can thank him for no little people being cast as the dwarves in the Snow White movie, because he said that it was offensive if they got cast, and he has been accused of being one of those people who gatekeeps and kicks the ladder out from behind him, because, yes, he got famous for playing dwarves and little people in all the movies that he's ever been in. But now he's saying that it's not fair to cast those people now that he's rich and famous and he doesn't need the roles himself, you know.
That's okay. That's his fault. Peter Dinklage is who you're talking about.
Yeah, Dinklage, yes.
And he's one person, but I don't speak for Latinos. I don't speak for the Latin community. I'm speaking for myself, but I am the representation on this podcast. That being said, Peter Dinklage is a short person. He's a little person. Excuse me. That's what they prefer to be called. Whatever you prefer to be called, you can speak for yourself and say, I don't think a majority of people want to be this, but he can't speak for everyone. And I feel like there's a lot of people that would actually die to have that kind of role.
There has been several little people actors who have came out and said that they are really upset that they were never called for those parts.
Absolutely. And I am pretty upset that they went CGI role. I did not like. I don't care that they went with different, like, backgrounds and races and et cetera in terms of how they picked them. That was fine with me. I could care less about that. It was the fact that it's Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. You took the dwarf out of it for whatever reason, and then you went back to it, but CGI.
Well, the reason for that was whenever they showed the actual, like, actors who were playing the dwarves, they looked like the seven homeless people from San Francisco is what they
100%.
Looked like.
100%, and there was outrage, rightfully so. There's been so much outrage on this film. I just don't think it's worth coming out anymore. But that's a whole different discussion.
Rachel Zegler is, I mean, she's still out there running her damn mouth. She's like, I mean, the whole thing is. But to come back to John Leguizamo, he is one of those people that every time that there's some kind of way that he can push his two cents about a Latino or Latinx role, he's out there whining about it. I don't know why he's got this chip on his shoulder, because he's been in a lot of movies. Like, Ice Age in particular should be paying him royalties for the rest of his fucking life, because he played that little weird sloth character in it. So he's going to be like, I mean, the man's got his own money. He's made it. So I don't know why he is suddenly the spokesman for, you know, that community. Like, you know, anybody gives a shit. The only movie that he's been in that actually fits him as a person is the movie Pest. I don't know if you remember that movie, yes, but he's basically very annoying in that movie, and it basically fits him in real life.
Yeah. But
he even did the voice for Bruno in Encanto. I mean, like, you know that that's such an iconic role that he had to have made bank on it. I mean,
yeah,
because we don't speak about Bruno. I mean, that's just how it is. We don't
speak about Bruno.
But he was also in Spawn. He played the little, you know, which if you're talking about anything that was, you know, that should have went to another actor, that little clown, evil clown in Spawn should have went to Danny DeVito. Let's just be honest. Ah! He looks like the character.
Yeah.
But John Leguizamo got that role.
Yeah.
He was in Summer of Sam. He was in Summer of Sam. He was in Violent Night. He played the bad guy in that. He was in Assault on Precinct 13, the remake in 2005. He's been in a ton of stuff. He just needs to shut his fucking mouth. Like, he's rich. He's disconnected. Nobody cares what he has to say.
Yeah.
We have Robert Joy playing Charlie, the simple-minded but deadly accurate sniper in the movie. And I did not realize this. He plays one of my favorite new characters on the TV show From, the good horror TV show that we've recommended to you, me and Donnie G. I don't know if you remember this, Urena, like us talking about it. But Robert Joy, I did not realize, was one of the new additions to that show, but like he has quickly became my favorite character on the show.
Which show again?
From the one where it's like,
yeah,
where they're trapped in the community with the monsters or whatever, and they can't seem to get out of it. It's like purgatory type.
Yes, show or I was whatever. Trying to watch it again the other day when I was getting my tattoo, and I had 8 hours to spare, so that would have been really good if I was able to access it.
But he plays the father of one of the main characters in the show, and not only does he look like he could be the father of that character, but he is such a good actor in the show. And like when I realized that he was that character,
yeah,
I was like, that makes fucking sense, because he's one of my favorite characters in the movie. He really is. He was also in The Hills Have Eyes from 2006, which is a rough movie to watch. I mean, because the grape scenes in that are way worse than the original. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Was it in The Hills Have Eyes or the second one? I thought the second one was the even crazier one.
It might have been more crazy, but that RV scene in the remake is, it goes on and it goes on. And like and the screams and the crying and the grape. And I'm like, stop. Just move on.
Noah said the second one, like they were in like some kind of cave or something. And he's like, there's a fucking one of the mutants, if you will, giving her the dick of doom, literally.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's what it's all based on. So, and he was in The Dark Half. Good. I believe Romero directed The Dark Half, which makes it even better. Stephen King movie.
Yeah, Stephen King. Okay. Was that part of, no, I'm thinking something different. Go ahead.
What were you thinking of?
For some reason, In the Mouth of Madness came to mind.
No, that's Sutter Kane. It's like a knockoff of Stephen King that John Carpenter did.
Oh, John Carpenter. Okay.
It was part of we covered Needful Things. Dark Half is actually like a prequel to Needful Things.
That's what I was thinking. I knew it was attached to something. I just wasn't sure.
And he was in Amityville 3D. So he's got some horror bona fides. I mean, he's been in a lot of horror-related stuff. He's a good character actor. You get Robert Joy, you get a good character actor.
Yeah.
We got Asia Argento playing Slack, which is the hooker ready for some action. she is also the daughter of Dario Argento, the famous Italian director who, you know, helped Romero get Dawn of the Dead, you know, funding overseas. And because of that, she has been in a number of his movies. Imagine that, you know, she's in her dad's movies.
Big shocker.
Mother of Tears, Dracula 3D, Demons 2. She was in a movie he produced called The Church, who by the same director who made De La Morte De La Mort. So, you know, it's got that connection. Dario's movie Trauma, and then Phantom of the Opera from 1998. That was also, I think, related to his stuff. She has gotten some issues, though, in recent years.
Yes, she has.
Child predator, maybe?
Ugh.
Just a little bit? She's an odd one. Like, her face is, like, not the prettiest.
No.
But she's kind of attractive in this movie, and I don't know. It has to be the hooker angle. I don't know why, but, like, she's not I don't know. She's not pretty enough to be like, you know, somebody that's like, damn, you know, but like.
I think it's because she's got that goth vibe going.
I think that's what it is. I mean, that and the, you know, just the I don't give a fuck attitude that goes along with it. You know, that's attractive, ladies. It really is. So, you know, there you go. We got Eugene Clark playing Big Daddy, the smartest zombie ever. And
Big
he was in
Daddy.
Big Daddy.
He's a Bubs knockoff or a Bub knockoff.
I'm going to tell you something about Big Daddy while we're at, first of all, Eugene Clark was in Night Heat. That's one of his big claims of fame. Bunch of other TV stuff. Fine. He's fine. He's fine in the role, but here's the thing. I feel like he is such a cheap ripoff of Bub that like when you compare the two of them, like Bub is so much better of a, both the actor Howard Sherman and what Romero had the characters doing. It's just like, all you really see Big Daddy doing this movie is basically cry. Crocodile tears, because zombies, you know, they're all dried up in this movie, so they wouldn't be able to actually cry. But he's just crying for dead zombies. I mean, am I wrong in that? Like, is he, besides, like, you know, being smarter than he has any right to be as a zombie, and there's no, the one thing I liked about Bub is that you see him learning, so you believe it whenever at the end when he shoots Rhodes.
Yeah.
There's Big Daddy does not earn any of the stuff that he gets to do in this movie. I don't feel like.
I have to agree with you, because he's just like this leader, but it's like for reasons unknown.
Yeah. Like he comes out to pump the gas. It's like, okay, they're all kind of learning. So he's still doing what he did as a human, but the sky flowers don't affect him. Why? Like, why is he the chosen one that, you know, doesn't get affected by him?
Interesting. Yeah. Now that I think about it,
it's just really, it's like if Romero had just gave like a little bit of context, like just a scene or two, like before he interacted with humans to show Big Daddy, like learning stuff that, you know, on his own or whatever, to kind of give you an idea why he became their leader, then I would be okay with it. Not, I wouldn't be happy because Bub earned his independence, but I would have been happier than what we got. It literally, you just see him and suddenly he's like super zombie. I don't know. It's just kind of annoying about the character.
Yeah.
Dennis Hoffman plays Kaufman, the elitist over Fiddler Green, AKA George W. Bush. Let's just get it out in the open.
Yeah.
He is George W. But he even says the line, we don't negotiate with terrorists. I mean, he says it. Some people said he's Rumsfeld. Okay, I can give you that, but he's a combination of the two of them. He's maybe not as dumb as George W. Bush, so Rumsfeld might be a better connection, but he's still like, I mean, he is Republican neocon politics from 2000, basically, is what he is.
I didn't even think about that when I first watched this, but I guess this came out in
2005.
Okay, so I wasn't into politics quite yet.
But If you give it enough time and you kind of go back and look, you see, and we'll get into more of the politics. I'm just throwing out the obvious one. He is basically the Republican elites from early 2000s, the one that passed the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
And you know, all the wars that we waged and all that stuff. After 9/11, that is what he represents. He was in Waterworld. Dennis Hoffman, we've already covered him once already. He was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre too. Played Lefty, you know, going to find, you know, his nephew and niece or whatever, you know, his nephew or whatever, because his good old, and I don't know why I'm blanking on the character's name. The fat ass that we hated in Texas Chainsaw. We gave an award after him. Like that was his name.
Oh God.
Franklin, the Franklin Award.
Yes, the Franklin Award.
Yeah, so he was Franklin's uncle in that movie. I mean, but every movie he's in, he plays like an eccentric character. Speaking of Super Mario Brothers, he played Koopa in that. He was in the movie Blue Velvet. He plays like a pimp in that movie that's like way out there. He was an Easy Rider back in the day. He was in Speed, True Romance. He plays Red Rock West. He plays a bad guy in that, from a bounty hunter from Texas. That's a Nicolas Cage movie. Highly recommend, just saying. Apocalypse Now. It actually is. Red Rock West is one of Nick Cage's best movies. I'm not even lying about that. It's really good. And then in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. We have Joanne Boland, who plays Pretty Boy, which is a weird name for a woman, but she's the driver of Dead Reckoning.
Yeah.
She was in Saw 4, X-Men Apocalypse. We have Tom Savini, don't know who that is.
Never heard of him.
Playing a machete-wielding zombie who could be the same character from Dawn of the Dead.
What do you mean could be? I think he is.
It is. I'm just throwing it out there. That, well, technically, legally, he's not, because the reason they call him machete-wielding zombie instead of... there was another name that he had in Dawn of the Dead, but they couldn't use that name because the rights were owned by a different company, and so Universal was like, just call him machete-wielding zombie, and we all know who he is, but we just won't call him the same character name.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright both appear as photo booth zombies, at least in the unrated version of the movie, because Romero loved Shaun of the Dead so much, he wanted them to be in his movie. And of course, if you're fans of Romero, like they both were, I mean, they made a love letter to him. You don't say no to George whenever he calls you up to have you in a movie.
No.
Hell, I mean, I would have died to have been like even an extra in one of his movies before he passed.
It was Edgar Wright, though. And who's Edgar Wright?
He's the actual director of the movie, not Nick Frost, but
yeah,
who directed him.
I wish it was Nick Frost, honestly. That would have been
cool. It should have been. It would have made more sense, yeah. But, you know.
Exactly.
Synopsis. Years into the zombie apocalypse that started Die of the Living Dead, the surviving humans have made fortifications out of the larger cities and raid the surrounding rural areas for supplies. Over time, the zombies have begun regaining some of their cognitive abilities and seem to be imitating what it was like when they were living. A group of supply runners is caught in a battle between the smarter zombies and the elites running Fiddler Green, a fortified high-rise in Pittsburgh. With only hours remaining before a terrorist blows up the high-rise, these supply runners must risk their lives to try to recover the armored vehicle Dead Reckoning and save their friends. Charlie is an ace with a gun, Slack is ready for some fun, and Riley just wants to head north. Rise of the Zombies is the other tagline.
The reason why I like Rise of the Zombies is because they use the Z word. They use the Z word.
Of course, they call them slacks, or what they call them, stenches in this movie, which aggravates the piss out of me. It's like, come on, Romero. I don't like stenches at all. Yes, they probably stink, but regardless, you know.
I do like the dead shall inherit the earth, though, and I think I'm sticking with that one.
Yeah, it's a lot better. Yeah. Quotes in the movie, of course, we've got to have Pillsbury, because when you have a big, tall, overweight Samoan character in a movie, you got always, and he's as funny as is in this movie, you got to quote him.
Yeah.
Motown is hot wiring a car, and then yells at her, yellow to red, and she's like, what the fuck does a Samoan know about hot wiring a fucking car? And Pillsbury's like, 50,000 cars stolen at Samoa every year. And she's like, well, 1 million in Detroit. And he's like, yes, but Detroit has 50 million cars. Samoa, 50,000. Everyone's stolen.
Oh, shit.
It's a pretty good line. Kaufman, of course, while he's picking his fucking nose, which is why I say he's like, you know, George W. Bush in a way.
Yeah.
Zombies, man, they creep me out. Kaufman also, we do not negotiate with terrorists.
Nice.
You know. Charlie, what happened, Riley? Did you get fucked? Mike, it's like a bad dream. And then Charlie, I have bad dreams. Hell yes, just look at me. You can tell I have terrible dreams. Which is kind of a line that he uses all throughout the movie. Just look at me. You can tell, you know, that sort of thing. Slack, what's your story, Riley? And then Riley says, I don't have one. Nothing bad ever happened to me. And then you kind of get the flip side of that later when he reveals that technically all the bad stuff happened to people he loved. It didn't happen to him. So that's why he says that. Slack, Charlie, why do you lick your rifle? Charlie catches the light. And she's like, what light? How can you see anything? And he's like, good eye. Because he's only got one eye isn't like scarred up, you know?
Oh, my God.
Kaufman, in a world where the dead are returning to life, the word trouble loses much of its meaning.
Yeah.
And then Mike, they're pretending to be alive, and then Riley, and this is the beginning of the movie, so here's your message, folks. Isn't that what we're doing, pretending to be alive?
Yep.
All right, before I get into the politics of this movie and what the story's actually trying to symbolize, because Romero went from like making veiled, you know, allegories to full-on allegories in this movie, visually, the zombies are pretty fucking sweet in this movie. They're the best Romero zombies that you ever get.
Yes, best Romero zombies. I don't really like Big Daddy's face, per se.
No, he's the... But here's the other thing, too. You can definitely tell that Greg Nicotero had a hand in designing the zombies in both this and Walking Dead, because he definitely took the Big Daddy approach to all the zombies in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
You know, had the face build up to where, you know, you could sink in more of the cheek and all that stuff.
Exactly. Well, and some people, too, in The Walking Dead just flat out had certain disorders that already caused them to have that sunken in look.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
There are certain zombies in this movie, though, that I like way better than others. Like at the beginning when they're showing, like, the, which I love that whole scene, how it looks with the rural town and they got the zombies kind of like doing their own thing in it. It's kind of creepy, but kind of cool to see the zombies like returning to their own little life without the humans around to kind of, you know, distract them.
Yeah.
But the one zombie lady that's kind of like emaciated and barely held together, she's like mostly bone, like with a little bit of skin on her. I know it's like a puppet-like effect, but I really like how that zombie looks.
No, that one looks good. I'm telling you, I'm looking at Bub's face right now. Not Bub's.
Actually, Bub is in this movie. I don't know if you were aware of that. No. There's a scene. It's not really Bub, but it's an homage to him. In the liquor store, the one that breaks out on Cholo or whatever. He's even got the collar around his neck, just like Bub.
Hold on, I'm looking for the collar. Give me a second, because I'm seeing it, but... Oh, there he does.
Yeah, every time I see that zombie, I'm like, okay, fake Bub, there you are.
No, what's his name? Big Daddy. He's got this... It's like his face is made out of clay or something, and they drew wrinkles in.
It just doesn't
look good, because he looks youthful but with wrinkly skin, and that's not very, I don't know, it's just not zombie-ish to me.
The other zombies look better. I like that one girl zombie that's like, you know, there's the boy and the girl and they're kind of like, you know, lovers or whatever, but you can see her mouth like through the bite that somebody did on her a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
You can actually see her jaw. I think that's a cool effect on her every time they show her.
I think I'm seeing her. Yeah, I can see her right now too.
I like the butcher zombie. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
And actually that same actor was the truck driver in the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Oh, shit.
Or not truck driver. He was the redneck that was with him or whatever, that was, you know, got killed whenever they were trying to go save the guy across the street or whatever, you know, the guy over the gun shop. He drops down in the sewer, breaks his leg, and then they have to leave him behind. It's that guy or whatever.
Yeah.
Trying to think of other zombies in the movie I like. The zombie clown looks stupid. It's in the movie for like a second, but it's too much. The zombie clown in Zombieland is way better. Just throwing that out there. Let's see. A lot of people give shit to this one zombie, but I like the idea, even though it's very impractical and doesn't really, it's weird that it would work this way. The zombie preacher that ends up biting the one guy that Kaufman sends with Riley and the rest of them, because he's walking and he has no head, and they're like, what the fuck is this thing? And he slings his head because it's barely attached, you know, to his spinal column still. And he flings it and bites him or whatever. And then Charlie shoots through the chest and through the back of the head. But a lot of people gave shit to that zombie because they're like, that zombie should technically not function because of how, you know, the head is no longer directly attached. But I like the attempt by Romero to kind of do something different with that one.
I concur. Because it was still a really cool effect.
Yeah, it's a good scary effect. The one zombie that bites Cholo is pretty good too. It's because it's really emaciated, really dead looking.
Yes.
Because he gets the one at a distance and he's celebrating, and then the one really dead zombie's right beside of him and he didn't even see it and it bites his hand. You know?
I love it. Why did they name him Cholo? I fucking hate that. Or maybe that was just his nickname in the zombie world.
I feel like Kaufman would have called him Cholo because Kaufman's a racist Republican, and that's why he would have called him that, you know?
Oh, God. So fucking cliche.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of any other zombies that really stand out. But I love the look of the world in this. I think Romero did a really good job. The scene, it's a little CGI looking, but the scene where Cholo dumps the crate in the body junkyard at the beginning of the movie, and then he has to shoot the dead body that's moving, the zombie there. that wasteland that Romero created to kind of represent the junkyard. It's a cool look. And all the rest of the movie looks like a world where, you know, things are run down. It's the zombie apocalypse been going on for years. Fiddler Green looks good. I like how they designed Dead Reckoning. I like that scene where Riley has all of them in the car and he's threatening the ones from Kaufman. He's like, okay, you're either with me and taking back Dead Reckoning and then letting me leave with it, or I'm going to leave you out here to the zombies. And they look out and you just see that blue haze or whatever for the nighttime and all the zombies kind of in the woods kind of milling around. I love that look. Like it's a good, you know, visual.
They're off in the yonder.
Yeah. It's kind of like, okay, basically the rural areas are just loaded with these things now. Timeline wise, this movie would have to take place before Day of the Dead. And the reason I say that is because Day of the Dead is after all of the primary outposts have failed. So I feel like it's at the very end of all this. Like, you know, this is before the last, you know, Rhodes and the rest of the group, you know, are still living in the bunker at the end of the world.
Yeah.
And also, if you watch Day of the Dead, Frankenstein, Dr. Logan, he doesn't reanimate. So finally the zombie virus has stopped reanimating people. Yeah,
I remember we discussed that.
And there's nobody in this movie that does that. So because remember the one guy in Fiddler Green who hangs himself still comes back as a zombie, you know, even though he wouldn't be it. So this takes place between day or dawn and day. It's like right in the middle. It's like somewhere in between the two of them timeline wise.
Dawn, land, day.
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't know. They kind of hint that, you know, the world, I mean, that wherever Riley's going, he's not really going to, I mean, make a good go of it, but he just wants out of the, you know, being trapped inside that city. Anything else you want to say about the visuals? Because, I mean, I like the dark look of it. I like the lighting. I mean, I don't have a complaint with the visuals other than Big Daddy himself. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a weird look to him. He's the main zombie. He looks too young, but like the wrinkles really don't work for the look.
Yeah. I don't even know. Everything else looked great though. Fiddler Green, yes, definitely looked great. I get the Republican point.
We'll get into that in a second with the story, but anyways, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying about not letting fucking Cholo in?
You can't let those Mexicans inside the, you know.
Like, you would think that you would want protection.
Listen, it's a white Republican. They don't care if you're protecting them. You can do your job out there at the border wall. You're not going to get inside of their house, okay? Oh my God.
Yeah, I whatever. You can vote for them, but you can't.
I'm throwing on Romero's politics. We're going to get into it even worse, but I'm just throwing out what he was throwing out.
Yeah. Know? Anywho, I don't know. Going back to the visuals, oh, God. Yeah, everything but, like I said, besides what's his name, Big Daddy. And there was a few zombies here and there that were like a little, you know, Dollar Tree now, but that's okay.
Hey, that one zombie that the soldier becomes and he's like chewing on the bone. He looks really good in that scene where Riley and the Kaufman guy like find him inside of that, you know, bunker where the ammo's at. He's got a good like scary kind of zombie look
thing. Yeah, I mean, they definitely know which ones to focus on. Of course, the few that I've seen weren't big zombies, so it wouldn't have made sense for them to be all done up. But you know.
I like the ones that have been desiccated in zombies for a long time because they have the most visually different look to them. Yeah. You know, and you could tell as a puppet, but the one zombie cheerleader that gets hit at the beginning of the movie, she's got a good look until, you know, the weird way she falls. And then you're like, okay, mannequin, you know, that sort of
thing. It was funny though.
All right. The story. So here's, tell me if I'm interpreting this wrong, but I've thought through this. So the zombies are regular Americans, like middle Americans, you know, salt of the earth people. The Skyflowers, aka fireworks, are patriotism. Kaufman and the elites use the patriotism to blind the zombies so they can do what the fuck they want. The zombies wake up and realize that patriotism doesn't mean shit, that they're getting used, they're getting killed. They've got to fight back. So that's regular everyday Americans looking past the rah-rah 4th of July, you know, founding fathers, you know, narrative and saying, okay, we're tired of our country being run by you assholes. We're going to throw you out. We're going to walk, march on Washington, big fiddler's green, and we're going to, you know, throw you out. That's first step of this. The people that Riley represent are the people who are the, you know, like the middle class Americans or whatever that are like, you know, they're not welcome amongst the elites, but the elites use them to, you know, to keep the salt of the earth people down, you know, like they're out there, they're stealing from the salt of the earth people. It's kind of like a financial broker or something, you know, they're basically taking the wealth from like these poor folks and then like funneling it up the chain to the rich people. They're the people that's allowed inside the city, which is, you know, they're near the elites, but they can't be part of the elites. And then of course, Fiddler's Green is politicians, the uber wealthy. They're living in, you know, complete, you know, the world never ended for them. Like they don't even know what it's like zombies even are, because they're living the high life, you know, they don't have to deal with any of it.
Yeah.
And then Kaufman in particular represents Rumsfeld / you know, George W. Bush, idiots who just, they're using everybody to, you know, basically, you know, get what they want.
Yeah, so, pretty much.
And then of course, Riley, his whole thing is that he wants to escape America and go to Canada because it's better.
Okay, but hear me out for a second. Isn't that a Democratic thing to want the Mexicans, per se, which they have in this, to stay and help, but not give them any other than, you know, here's a place to stay, not with us, but here's a place to stay out in the dumps, and you keep us on the high pedestal because no one's going to clean our toilets or kill our zombies, you know, well, if we don't have them.
According to Romero, that's how the Republicans viewed the Mexicans or whatever. Because remember, George Romero was a Latino himself. I mean, he was of that heritage. So
yes,
he,
understandably.
So, I mean,
it's in the name.
So, but also think about Kaufman's butler, as it were. It was almost a stereotypical black servant from back in the 40s, whenever, you know, which is actually became an offensive stereotype, you know, it's like, yes, sir, yes, massa, yeah, you know, like that type character. And so the white Republicans are willing to use their little, you know, happy-go-lucky, you know, black servants. And, you know, if Cholo would have been happy where he was at, out in the streets doing the cleanup work, he could have been that, but he can't be with the white folk. You know, it's like that's Romero's like statement on that.
Maybe Romero didn't like the Mexicans.
I'm not saying that it's a clean analogy, because none of his analogies are, but like, I feel like this is the most politically charged of all these fucking movies. Like it's on the nose. Like, I mean, the fact that he even says the line, "We don't negotiate with terrorists." Like, it's like, he dated this movie so much by putting it in that right there in that line, you know?
Yeah. I made myself laugh with the whole Romero didn't like the Mexicans.
So you take Day, and Day talks about being cynical about the government, being cynical about, you know, our organizations like science, you know, and all that, and being able to actually do their jobs. That's a universal, I feel like, long-term, like, you know, cynicism that people end up having over time. Like, you know, the government fucking sucks. CDC lied to us about COVID. It's out there, folks. Look it up. I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
Everything that was said back in 2020 by the conspiracy theorists has been revealed now. You can go look at it. Anyways. So they all lied to us. They all fucking suck. all you can relate to that perpetually for like till the end of time. But Romero dated this movie so much because it's basically like, okay, 9/11 and everything that happened after it was bad. Yes, although I agree with that statement, I feel like his caricature of like why the problem was what it was and you know, and who the leadership was is like, you know, okay, this is early 2000s. Like, this is what time period this is. Like, yeah, that's all it ever will be. I mean, if you can overlook that if you really try, but I mean, it's there. It's very much there, and it's not even under the surface.
Yeah, exactly.
So given all that stuff that I said, what do you feel about the like basic premise of the movie, which is that Riley wants out, Kaufman won't let him, Cholo tries to make his way into the big leagues, gets denied by Kaufman, who's a racist, he steals Dead Reckoning, threatens to blow up a bunch of people because apparently that's what Mexicans do when they get mad. They threaten to blow people up.
Yes. Can confirm.
And you have to rely on your white guy to go in there and save the day.
That really is what happened, isn't it?
I mean, what else am I supposed to say?
That's yeah, I mean, that's so funny because it's like he was trying to make it was like he was trying to make the white people look bad, but then he made the white people look good.
Because I mean, yeah, a lot of people die, but Riley tries to save them. So it's like, you know, okay.
So I don't see color, apparently. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't get the political aspect of this movie. It just didn't. And you've discussed this with me many times, so it's not like I wasn't aware when I was rewatching it. However, that being said, I feel like regardless of race, background, ethnicity, etc., I feel like this would have happened because eventually all of the lower people, because weren't there some white people too that weren't in the high crowd?
Oh yeah. The preacher or the reverend or whatever he was, yeah. Priest that was out in the streets. He is one of the freedom fighters at the end who actually tells Riley, even though the city's overrun with zombies now, they'll somehow find a way to make it a go of it. And I'm like, I don't believe you, but okay, if that's what you think. And then, him and a bunch of the, you know, other folks around there were also like white, you know, and,
yeah,
and so all that. So
I feel like eventually the poor people, if you will, were going to turn on the elites eventually because.
Yeah, because he was out there in the streets, like, you know, dissenting against them anyways already.
Exactly. But not only that, but eventually resources were going to run out. Now, I know they had Dead Reckoning and they would go out, they would get resources, etc. But eventually they were going to get slim pickings, and then the poor were going to turn against the rich. They were going to win because they're the actual fighters in this situation. And the people, the elites, they didn't really, other than being in their high rise, they didn't really have any power.
No, the only power they had was the loyalty of whatever soldiers were working for them.
Exactly. So, and by
which
denying
is
them,
kind of like the U.S. government, to exactly. be honest, but
and like denying them nicer resources, if you will, was not the way to go. So this was going to happen regardless. It was all coming to a head, and you got to remember, this is the apocalypse. People are bored. That's when humans turn into monsters too.
Which is why, I mean, they have the line about Kaufman wanted to give people their games, their vices, and all that to keep them distracted, which yeah. is its own political statement, you know, but. The zombies figure into it a lot too, though, because the zombies do represent like the people out in the sticks who are basically just used and abused by everybody. And I appreciate that commentary by Romero, and I think he would have been better off if he would have focused on that versus the Republican, you know, neocon angle that he went with as far as like Kaufman and all them. I think if he would have had like the zombies being middle America that's just constantly like getting raided by these cities and getting like, you know, because you think about like, I mean, they call us flyover states. I mean, it's a pejorative term. Basically there's nothing here, you know, worth visiting, and just work your damn farms. Give us food. We don't want anything else from you fucking, you know, hicks, and just, you know, we'll enjoy our high life out on the coast, you know, east or west. that's kind of how they treat middle America. So I think there was a commentary there that he could have really picked up and did something with, but he kind of left it for the neocon angle that he was going, that he went with eventually.
Yeah.
Acting in the movie, since we talked about story here, Big Daddy, not as good as Bub, like the actor, no. Just Eugene Clark's not any, he's not Howard Sherman. Riley was fine. I liked Charlie. Asia Argento's just there for, you know,
cause daddy let her.
Well, that and the fact that, I mean, despite having, you know, a butter face, I mean, she does have
a butter face too.
Yeah, just despite that, though, I mean, I guess she's, I mean, a little bit of eye candy or whatever otherwise. But her acting is not really the best.
No.
I enjoyed Dennis Hopper. I mean, he always plays like an eccentric out there character. And then Leguizamo, I'll give him his credit as an actor. He's actually good in the movie. I just wished he'd shut the fuck up in real life.
Same. There's a few actors I feel that way about. I mean, just on X alone, finding out what of our favorite actors are like, I don't like X. We're going to be over here. It's like,
I'm going to be on Blue Sky.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say it. I didn't even want to give them the advertising.
Well, they're also known for CP, so...
Ew!
Yeah.
Not support that, a death holler.
No. It's a mixed bag in this movie. You have good character actors, you have decent regular actors, and then you just have, like, people hamming it up. Like, Savini, I mean, God love him, like, whenever he's hamming it up the entire time as Machete Zombie, so...
Yeah.
But it's not bad. I mean, I feel like we had better acting in obviously Train to Busan when it comes to that. But I really, there's certain scenes with Charlie and Riley in this movie that I really do like. I like them as a, kind of a duo working off of each other.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add as far as the acting?
There was a few cheesy actors. Nothing right off the top of my head, but you could tell the ones that weren't like the mains were just a little extra.
The one kid who is sent by Cholo to go to the docks and he gets ate by like the zombie clown, that kid couldn't act. He's pretty lame in the movie.
I think, too, that some of the zombies that were turning back into people or they're trying to be alive, a little, I don't know.
The butcher, he fluctuates. Yes. Like there's some scenes where he's menacing, other scenes, the way that he's moving and some other things, it's a little bit like, okay.
Exactly.
You're a little much right now.
There's some cheesy moments, but it is supposed to be reminiscent of Dawn of the Dead. The older one, in a sense.
By the way, this is in trivia. You know what the guys who were in the band at the beginning of the movie who were playing their instruments, do you know what song they were playing?
No.
Snippets from The Gonk.
Oh, son of a bitch! I caught the last one in the other film. Did not catch this one.
Yep. You didn't catch it in this one, but that's what they were playing. Funny.
I'm not surprised. So, you know, it is supposed to have that cheesiness to it. I did think, though, that everything combined, and we're still on acting, but I did think that everything combined kind of led to a pretty decent fucking film, even with the zombies kind of turning back into somewhat, or trying to turn back into normal, average people.
We didn't talk about the little person in this movie, the little guy in the hat or whatever. Talk about his acting was like all over the place.
God, it's not ringing a bell.
Well, I mean, they rung his bell. The little guy with the beard that has the big cowboy hat on that looks like it could swallow his entire fucking body, the one that's running the games where Slack, the hooker, is being thrown inside the cell with the zombies or whatever, the cage, and Charlie blows his brains out. Do you not remember that scene?
No! Like, holy fuck, I don't know how I missed that.
You might have watched it. I'm pretty sure that's still in the unrated, or I mean in the rated version.
I don't even remember seeing it originally.
Yeah, he's like, I mean, the little actor that they got playing it, I mean, it's just like he goes from being like way over the top to like barely say, or, you know, emoting whatsoever. And then he gets his brains blown out. So there's that, you know.
Hold on. I am Googling because I'm genuinely surprised. No, and nothing great is coming up because I don't know why pictures of fucking Chuck Norris is coming up.
Well, he has a beard like Chuck Norris, but I'll try to send you a picture later. It might jog your memory.
That's
but
fine, because I, yeah, absolutely do not remember.
The music in this is kind of like dramatic, you know, like music. It fits the scenes. I can't really say that it, like, you know, helps or hinder. The one good thing, now there is one scene that I really like the music, and it's a good visual too, when Big Daddy and the rest of the zombies rise up out of the water.
Oh yes.
And it's playing that music in the background, that kind of light, like, you know, it's the main theme of the movie that plays, but it's like very light and it's kind of menacing at the same time. I like that bit of music and the way that scene's, you know, looks or whatever.
Okay, I remember the guy now. He does look like Chuck Norris. I remember. Man. Oh my god, that is comical. In the purple and green suit.
All right. You want to get into trivia and then we'll have a review and we'll wrap this up.
Yes.
This is partly based on the original much longer script for Day of the Dead, which what we said in that one was basically that Fiddler Green was going to be like a science complex where the soldiers and the scientists were like conducting studies on the zombies or whatever.
Yeah.
Romero didn't have the money for that. So they went underground. There was only a few scientists, only a few soldiers. They were running out of time. So that's the reason that, you know, but that's how it got changed. At the beginning of the movie, the tambourine zombies and the bandstand are playing the gonk a little bit. So that's what they're doing. And the tuba. Guy.
Fucking A. I'm going to have to find that scene now.
Romero was so impressed with Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright's Shaun of the Dead that he asked them to be part of the movie in the photo booth, as we said. The movie's Pittsburgh premiere was at the Byham Theater, which used to be called the Fulton Theater. And this theater was the Fulton that was originally used to screen The Night of the Living Dead when it premiered in 1968. So kind of a good circling back, even though it changed names, it was still the same place that Romero used to premiere it in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Romero's daughter appears in the film. She's the soldier who shoots the zombie on the electrified fence.
Nice.
In later interviews, George Romero implied that Dennis Hopper's cigar budget cost more than his original entire Night of the Living Dead budget altogether.
Wow.
So them are some expensive cigars, just saying. An amputee played the legless zombie climbing on the back of Dead Reckoning. His name is David Campbell, and he was also in Dawn of the Dead, yes, the remake, as Squish Zombie.
Was he the Squish Zombie? Because didn't they have... Okay, so Dawn of the Dead, didn't they also have a zombie that was legless that was climbing the fence in the, because that's the mall one. No, or is that Day of the Dead?
Dawn of the Dead is the one with the mall, yes.
Okay, yeah, underground when they were in the parking lot, there was a fenced area that a legless zombie was climbing. I wonder if that was him as well.
Yep, they probably reused him for that scene, I would imagine. Romero intended to make this film in his hometown of Pittsburgh, but because of, you know, money and the tax advantages, they filmed it in Toronto.
Yeah.
So
Pennsylvania is, according to our girl Daphne, and from what I've read and seen, very California-like.
Very expensive?
Yes, very expensive, very California-like. And they don't even have the California weather to go with it.
No, they really don't.
Mm-mm.
Simon Baker took on this role in the film because he never appeared in a horror movie before and because he wanted to work with George. So that's always a good reason.
Hell yeah.
The view of the zombies rising from out of the river is an homage to a classic scene from Herc Harvey's Carnival of Souls.
Oh, I love Carnival of Souls.
That is a good fucking movie.
Yes, it is.
Where the dead rise out of the Great Salt Lake before the dance sequence at the end of it.
Oh my God. I remember watching that movie on repeat. I was such a creepy ass little kid too.
I'm surprised your daughter isn't obsessed with that movie, but
I don't think I've played it for her, but now I need to find it and introduce her.
Especially the twist at the end of the movie when you find out. Yeah. The most expensive George Romero zombie movie was this one, obviously. The opening credits includes a montage detailing the zombie outbreak leading up to the events of this film with black and white footage and radio broadcast depicting the infection spread over the earth. Some of the images come from Romero's Night of the Living Dead, and then Romero wanted to use footage from his two other films, but the rights were tied up with other distributors, so he couldn't use them. Also, the scene in the credits for Tom Savini's cameo, even though he is the undead version of the Dawn of the Dead character Blades, he could not be credited as that character, so he is now Machete Zombie. This is the first film in George Romero's Living Dead series which uses digital effects, a.k.a. the zombie that throws its head over its shoulder and bites the one guy. There's another digital scene in this movie that always is very glaring to me, and I really hate it and don't know why that Romero did it. When Big Daddy makes the butcher zombie like hack through the wood in the fence, and then he looks, and you get that quick scare jump scare with the zombie's face like swinging into the, you know, the frame. It's so blatantly like CGI'd on that it looks just really weird. Like, I mean, when especially in the transition, I think if he just had a face there, that would have been actually really there. It would have been way better. They also use CGI blood in this movie, and a lot of people gave them shit over that because you're better using squibs if you can, you know, like actual blood packs that explode whenever somebody, you know, gets squibs. I just heard about this one guy that made a movie called, what is it? It's something Dick in 1944, Dangerous Dick's the name of it or something like that. And it's about this guy filmed it for $10,000. It doesn't look that bad for an independent movie made for $10,000. And the way that he got by without filming CGI blood is that he filled water balloons with blood, had people throw it at the people who were going to get shot. And then when it exploded, he used the CGI to remove the balloon, but left the blood in there so that you're actually getting, you know, like exploding, like, you know, like water balloons, but then he CGI'd out the balloons so you don't see that part of it.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
That's a smart way to get around it and then not, you know, go all digital like George did in these movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Dennis Hopper based his performance as Kaufman on Donald Rumsfeld. Again, the political connotations. The success of Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead led to Universal greenlighting this movie. That remake of Dawn is actually a really good thing because I'm glad that George got to make this movie. I feel like it, I mean, he did a good job with it. It's not like terrible, and it allowed him to actually have a big budget zombie movie, which he always wanted but never really got until this one.
Yeah.
We already said Asia Argento is Dario Argento's daughter. A non-union zombie would make $9 per hour Canadian, while a union zombie for a minimum of 8 hours would make $158 Canadian.
Total for the whole film?
For the whole day that they filmed for 8 hours.
Okay, that makes sense.
This is the first film in the series to be released with an MPAA rating, which George, I mean, he did have an unrated cut, but I mean, it was an R-rated film when it came out. There were four titles before Land of the Dead, Dead City, Dead Reckoning, Twilight of the Dead, and Night of the Living Dead, Dead Reckoning was the names of the movies.
Hold on.
Land is fine. Dead Reckoning was actually used for a comic book sequel / or prequel, whatever it was, which I think Dead Reckoning is better for a comic. Twilight of the Dead is good, but that implies that it comes after Day. And they're actually talking about making Romero's last book or whatever into a movie called Twilight of the Dead. So that could be a better send-off of his movies, which could also come out during this new zombie renaissance anytime. So
yeah,
Dead City is a little too generic. I don't think that would have worked.
Yeah, and I feel like that's been used multiple times, but not for anything good.
Yeah, and Night of the Living Dead, Dead Reckoning works and might have been good, but I don't feel like this movie connects well enough to Night of the Living Dead for it to earn that long name.
Yeah, it's a little TLDR.
Yeah. So I think Land of the Dead's fine. I mean...
Yeah. And, I mean, there is an... I always get confused. Is there an older Land of the Dead?
I don't feel like there
is. Okay, I keep mistaking that, but okay.
Much like Bub in Day of the Dead 1985, Big Daddy is never seen attacking a living human for food and thus only kills the human antagonist as an act of revenge. Bub did, however, consume the butchered flesh and organs of the recently deceased Private Johnson and Private Miller, given to him by Dr. Logan, implying that he had not entirely lost his taste for human flesh. He was just a little bit more refined about it, you know.
He's a little more distinguished about it.
That's another thing about Big Daddy, though, that kind of bothers me. Like, why is he not even attracted to the food, like, at all? Like, he's like the Gary Sue of zombies. I'm just saying.
Gary Sue? Oh, my God.
Or Gary Stu, as we called him, or whatever. But I think Gary Sue's a little bit better.
I like Gary Sue better. Gary Stu, I get it. I get it why it's supposed to be that. Also, you were pretty upset about him not being distracted by the sky flowers.
Yeah, it's like there's no reason why he suddenly is, you know, like this random thing in the sky that makes all the zombies like freak out. Like he's better than them. Like he doesn't get distracted by it. Like,
he's more progressed. Okay. You wouldn't get it.
Yeah, because he's a black man living in a white man's world, and he, yeah, political connotations, racial, yeah. Okay. Anyways, Bub does make an appearance, as we said in the beginning. He's the zombie that breaks out of the freezer when Cholo goes to get the champagne from the fridge. So
that's hella funny.
John Leguizamo's character's name Cholo is a pejorative word used in South American Spanish to refer to Ecuadorians, Peruvians, and Bolivians who have strong Indian features. There you go.
What? That's what Mexicans call gangsters. Lean like a cholo, elbows up, side to side.
Apparently down south, a little bit farther south, that's what you call the ones that are not white looking. So there you go.
Racist.
I don't call them that.
I wasn't calling you racist. I'm just saying that's racist. Eso es racista.
That's so racista. The first trailer for this film used clips not just from Night of the Living Dead, but also Dawn and Day. And although Night is in the public domain, the other two are not, and therefore they got a big stink about it and avoid legal troubles. The trailer was quickly pulled from distribution and hasn't been officially shown since then. So there you go. Fiddler's Green is a song about the place where cavalrymen go when they die, located halfway down the trail to hell.
Damn.
And in the end, it advocates suicide by pistol when death is certain and the hostiles are closing in. Fiddler's Green possibly originated in England, at least to the 19th century, and is still sung today. The song speaks of a place where fishermen go if they don't go to hell. It's found its way to the U.S. with the help of Cornish settlers. And the fictional place of Fiddler's Green is also the final resting place for pirates. So there you go.
It sounds like such a jolly place, but it's not.
No. And there's even that line, and I think this is politically motivated too, where Cholo's like looking, you know, they're watching the advertising for Fiddler's Green, and it's advertising all the great amenities they have. And then one guy in the background tells, you know, Cholo's best buddy says, they really sell it like it, you know, or they used to really sell it back in the day. And then Cholo says, well, I think it's still worth fighting for. And I think there's like, that was Romero's hint that America was once a great land, but now it's went to hell. And who gives a fuck about it? Let's go north to Canada. Let's go up there and get euthanized, everybody. Let's go. Go right now.
How that has not aged well at all.
We can go up there. We can live under Fidel's son's terrible regime, and we can, get euthanized. That's what we should do in Canada.
Yay.
Second movie in which John Leguizamo and Dennis Hopper appear. The other one is Super Mario Brothers from 1993. Mojo Nixon played the Goomba in that movie, so good for him. RIP, he passed from this world a couple years back. Dennis Hopper and Robert Joy previously appeared in Waterworld. In that movie, Hopper's character licks his thumb and touches his rifle sight before taking a shot. This is also a quirk of Charlie in this movie, so maybe there's a link there.
Yeah.
One working title for this film was Dead Reckoning, but it was changed to avoid confusion with the Humphrey Bogart film of the same name. I don't think anybody would have got the two confused, so I don't think that was a big reason to change it, but whatever. I mean, really, you're going to sit there and see a zombie movie and it's like, is this the Humphrey Bogart movie? It's like, what world are you living in, dude? Like, come on now.
Yeah.
The first and to date only George Romero zombie movie to use the 2.35:1 aspect ratio. His other films either use 4:3, which is, you know, the typical flat ratio. Night of the Living Dead used 1:33:1. Dawn used 1:85:1. Day used 1:85:1. And Diary used 1:16:9, aka 1.78:1. So this one's the only like traditional widescreen, you know, movie presentation that he ever really did.
Which makes sense for the times and what we were getting in theaters.
Yeah. I mean, if he's going to match it up with the rest of the movies coming out that time, that makes sense. The name of the military vehicle mainly used in this movie is Dead Reckoning, one of the film's working titles. Eugene Clark, who is 6'3", wore 2-inch heels on his boots to look even taller to make his character more imposing at 6'5".
Jesus.
This movie was banned in Ukraine.
Interesting.
I'm just going to throw that out there. It's our good friends over in Ukraine that got all of that money that our hurricane victims could have used. We salute you, Ukraine. Go fuck yourselves.
Pay for Ukraine.
Charlie licks his finger and then rubs them over his rifle's front sights just before he shoots Chihuahua. Is that the name of the little guy? It has to be.
That
is hilarious that his name's Chihuahua. Anyways. This is the same routine that Gary Cooper does in his portrayal of Sergeant York. When the character in Sergeant York is asked why he does that, he says it cuts down on the haze, and he always wets his sights when he's fixing to do some shooting. So there you go.
I never got that, but whatever.
I've seen that in other things where they do that, but I still don't think that picking up the light, I mean, what little there is on the sight's going to make that much of a difference, but... the undead cop was portrayed by Gino Cragnale, a makeup artist who was also responsible for the makeup department of the movie and later became a member of the Walking Dead crew. That makes sense because they look like the Walking Dead zombies. George Romero was initially in negotiations with 20th Century Fox, who wanted to call it Night of the Living Dead. Romero refused that because he did not want that title to be the same as the first in his series. And make people think it was a remake of some kind, which I don't blame him. So,
yeah.
Sasha Royez plays Manolete, the bullfighter, starred alongside Simon Baker as a politician and the mentalist. And although they share no scenes in this movie, Dennis Hopper and Asia Argento also appear in the thriller The Keeper from 2004. This movie features several actors from the Saw franchise, Tony Nappo from Saw 2, Alan Von Sprang from Saw 3, Joanne Boland from Saw 4, and Peter Outerbridge and Devin Bostwick from Saw 6. So there you go. This film continues the evolution of zombies within the Dead series. In Night of the Living Dead, they're mindless, instinct-driven creatures. Dawn, they start using some tools when they break into the window and kind of bite Peter. They're said to have rudimentary memories in their living lives. And Day, obviously, Bub is the pinnacle of learning how to do stuff. And they also hint in Day that the zombies avoid dangerous places where they might actually get shot, which they say in this movie too. So it's kind of the connection between the two of them. And then, of course, in this one, you have Gary Sue, which is
Gary Sue,
big daddy, and he can do everything.
Anything and everything.
Anything you can do, he can do better.
Yes.
and he even cries. So he's a man of the modern times. Okay.
He's just a sensey guy, you know, sensey zombie.
So you got Bub. I mean, Bub's kind of an old school guy. He, you know, he'll salute you before he shoots your ass. I mean, and you know, and he might call his Aunt Alicia, but he won't cry. But now Big Daddy, you know, he's in touch with his, you know, a more emotional side. He'll cry for you if he sees you dying. But only if you're a zombie. He don't give a shit about you otherwise.
Yeah, only his people.
Yeah. I still get it's so laughably racist when that black servant just runs away at the end of the movie. Like, is it just me or is it, I mean, I crack up every time. He's like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. And he just runs, you know, like, and I'm like, what the fuck am I watching right now? Like,
I don't understand. I am telling you, I was blissfully oblivious this entire rewatch and watching originally, etc. Because I saw that, I was like, yeah, I'd be getting the fuck out of there too. But like, I'm missing all these funny ass political messages.
Well, it's just, I mean, okay, it might be different because I'm a white guy and it's been ingrained in my mind, but like, you know, I always look at this, the race relations stuff, and that character is every bit like, and this goes back to zombie season, because remember I told you I watched those zombie movies with like Bob Hope or whatever, where he had like a black servant, and it was the classic like, oh no, you know, he's the cowardly black servant, you know, like he's always like, I ain't getting none of that, sir. I ain't, you know, he's that kind of like racist portrayal. This character is exactly that. It's just kind of, it cycled back somehow. Yeah. You know? Oh man, it just cracks me up for the wrong reason. But anyways, and finally, in the scene where the zombies get into the city, the soldier's playing cards, who has his head pulled off, his camouflage uniform says Rickles. So, salute to Rickles, who was the, you know, Gary Clark's character's, you know, Steel's best friend in Day of the Dead, you know.
Yeah.
Little callback to him. All right. I will let you have your say on what you think the rating should be on this movie.
I'm going to start with what my rating would have been when I first watched this. And that probably would have been a good solid 5, maybe a 4.5 to 5, somewhere in between there, because I really, really, really liked how the zombies were kind of coming to, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They're turning kind of not, they weren't turning back into humans, but they were turning back into somewhat functional members of society. And I was like, that's kind of cool. I don't feel like I've really seen that at the time. I don't really feel like I had seen that. And I was just like, yeah, they are just trying to get by. Now that I'm older, no politics included, by the way. This is not political because I missed everything political about this. But now watching this, I'm like, that would never fucking work. It would never work. The zombies still need to survive. They don't like the food. They're not... like, they need substance to survive. It's like those weird people that get in a cult and they're like, I only breathe air. I eat air. And they did this for 175 days. You're fucking lying. No, you didn't.
I survived by photosynthesis.
Exactly. So, that being said, zombies still have to eat people. They're still going to hunt. And ultimately, you guys can't coexist. That's not how it works. Sorry.
No.
Politically or not. Sometimes it just doesn't fucking work. So now this movie to me, I still like it though. It still has a place in my heart. I'm going to give this like a 3.8 because it's better than a 3.5, but it's not quite in the 4.0 mark.
So I will differ for you slightly in the fact that I do think it can earn a 4 with all of its flaws. I do hate the politics of it now that I mean, like, they're just so dated when you go back and watch it. And I don't disagree with some of the politics. I'll be honest with you. I could not stand and can't to this day George W. Bush, Rumsfeld, Cheney, all that bullshit.
Yeah.
I went from being, I was a Democrat around that time to, because I hated them so much, to, you know, voting for Obama, realizing that he lied to everybody and realizing that they both of them lie, and went, you know, basically libertarian. So that's kind of where I'm at politically. You can hate it or whatever you feel like. But whenever I go back and watch this, it's just that it's so ham-fisted. I just, like, there was better ways and more important, like, messages that George could have worked on. Like, I love the whole idea that the zombies were, like I've already said, like, were middle America kind of getting shit upon by the elites. He focus on that. Like, it's like a half, it's in there, but it's like a half-assed message because he's got that. But then he's got the regular humans that are underneath Fiddler's Green. So that's kind of a weird mix in there. They're kind of middle class, but not. I mean, I don't really know what he's saying with that. And then he's got the neocon Republicans, and it's like you did too much. Like, you should have did one or the other.
Yeah.
I've never been able to stand Big Daddy because you know that my absolute favorite George Romero movie is Day, and yes. Bub is the ultimate zombie. So Big Daddy does nothing but pale in comparison. Having said that, this is the only George Romero movie that I got to watch in theaters. So it automatically gets a bump from a 3.9 to a 4, even throughout time, because I got to watch this when it came out in a theater. And that means so much to me that I got to give it a little bit of a bump. And I'll throw this out there. I watched it in a slightly ghetto theater in Lexington, and there was some black people in the audience, and I'd never experienced that before. And the stereotypes of somebody walking in front of the screen and yelling at it were proven to be true. And it was so fucking entertaining. Is all I'm going to say. Like, whenever the zombies would show up and they'd be like, "You better get your ass out of there." And it's like, okay, I was dying laughing through the entire fucking movie. They made the movie even better just by the way that they were going about, you know, interacting with it. So
do you see my surprised look right now? Like, you not really? Wait, what? You in Lexington, you rarely have black people?
Well, A, in most of the theaters, I mean, no. And then B, I mean, that was the only one where I actually ever seen that in reality, where that actually happened.
You want to hear something funny? Out here in California, where I run the streets, it's usually in the theater, it's usually white women married to the black men that are throwing attitude.
So if we're going to go on this tangent, what I normally get, being where I'm at in Appalachia, if you watch, especially if you go to Harlan and you go watch a movie, because this happened in Harlan. Also, it happened in Richmond, so I can't say it's just in Harlan. I'll give them a little bit of a reprieve. You have people talking at the screen that are, you know, in a different way when you're in Appalachia. It's like the rednecks who are watching wrestling on TV, and they've got to, you know, tell everybody what they think about what's happening on the screen. I had Spider-Man ruined for me, the original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. I'm going to throw this out there for everybody because I love this story, and my wife had to endure this whenever she's with me, so it's a running joke. There was this redneck that had just crawled out from under a rock that was behind us, and when Spider-Man, in that pivotal moment when Uncle Ben is dying and in his arms, and Toby is crying, and it's supposed to be this very emotional, you know, heart-wrenching scene, all I can think of is this redneck sitting right behind me and saying in that exact moment, "Spiders don't cry."
Oh, God.
It ruined every fucking ounce "Spiders don't cry." I'm just like, what the fuck am I doing right now? Like, seriously. And he said it so loud, and it was just like, and then my buddy almost got in a fight at the Doom movie, the one with The Rock, when we watched it in Harlan, because there was some asshole that was sitting back there calling out like stuff like, "Fucking Rock sucks. Steve Austin could whip his ass." And it's just like, what does this have to do with any fucking thing that's going on in this fucking movie right now? My buddy told him to shut up, and then the guy stood up. My buddy almost fought.
Oh, shit. So
that's what you get in Appalachia. You don't, and I'll give you one more example, and this ruined this movie for me too in the theater, Conjuring. You know that scene in The Conjuring where the arms come out of the closet and then smack in front of the lady? It's like a pivotal moment in The Conjuring where it's out of that little wardrobe thing or whatever. Like, she's playing that little game blindfolded, and then they're doing the clapping game, and then the hands come out of the wardrobe and clap. And it's scary as fuck if you're watching it and you don't have the situation I did. I was watching that in a movie theater with somebody who was a nervous laugher. Anytime that they saw something that scared them, they laughed.
Yeah.
Imagine somebody cackling during that scene. It totally throws the fucking movie off and ruins that scene, like, completely. So when I have movies, like, I mean, that's the kind of shit I got to put up with in theaters around here. So when I had my experience in Lexington, this one and only time where I literally had two or three black people right in front of the screen, in the empty space in front of the screen, yelling, "Bitch, don't go in there." It made the movie. I swear to God, it made the movie that much better. So it gets a 4 out of me just because of the memories associated with it.
I saw this in the theaters too, but obviously I'm in California, so we got all kinds of different shit going on out here. I swear, Noah is just dying to get y'all down here in California Just to experience the culture. I mean, because we have multiple cultures. You guys have very limited, you know. You know, and then you'd get to see how California really is compared to what you guys are exposed to. But that being said, though, he just swears up and down. He's like, they would fucking love it because you'd be entertained nonstop. Entertained or shocked. You should have seen Daphne in Vegas. She thinks I didn't notice her expressions on her face.
Yeah, it's definitely different when you get a monoculture in an area. Like, people don't realize, like, what it's like. I mean, because when you get everybody around you that pretty much acts like you do and, you know, looks like you and all that, it's, I mean, it's way different. So, it's like I said, it. So besides the fact that it was my first and only Romero movie I could actually watch in the theater, because I don't think I watched Diary in the theater. I really don't. Like, yeah. I think that came out on, you know, video before I ever saw it. And then I was kind of disappointed when I did see it. But this one I enjoyed in the theater. That experience made it that much better. And I do like the movie upon rewatch. I watched it twice for this. Like, yes. Even though I've seen it 1,000 times, I watched it and I loved it both times. I love Charlie as a character in this movie. I think Robert Joy does a great job as that character. And Pillsbury is funny when he's in the movie. It's just that there is so much bad in this movie, like politically, and I just like wish George had like tightened the focus up. Like it could have been a 5. It could have easily. I would have. You talked about what you originally rated it. I would have rated originally a 4.5 because I liked it that much upon watching it.
Yeah.
But years later, after rewatching it and then rewatching Dawn of the Dead, the remake, which is a better movie, honestly, than this one. I hate to say that, but it's true. And then rewatching Shaun of the Dead, which is a better movie than this. Rewatching Train to Busan, even Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse for what it does. It's just like, it's a 4. That's the best I can give it. And I love George to death. He's one of my favorite people I ever met at a convention. You never, for what he did for inventing a genre, especially, like no other person alive that I know of invented a horror genre, but that man. And he was so humble, and he would sit there and talk to you, and you could tell he appreciated every fucking fan that came up to him.
Yeah.
I will always have a place in my heart for George Romero. Like, the man was awesome.
Understandably.
But, I can't – but this movie was not the best of his, you know, of the ones he made. That's always going to be Dave for me, and I always hold it up there as the better movie.
Respectable.
So, and that's why I wanted to end it on this one, because George, I mean, he made the genre, so he needed to be the one to close it out.
We started with George and we ended with George.
We kind of started with George. We kind of started with technically with I Am Legend, which inspired George, but it all comes back to George. It always has.
I really thought we did Night of the Living Dead first, but I guess we didn't.
No, actually, before we did that, we did Voodoo Zombies.
Ugh.
That's where it all kind of came from. George took that. He took I Am Legend and he made the zombies that we know. But
that being said, and this being the last episode of this season, I still am not a fan of Voodoo Zombies, and I'm not a fan of Weenie Worm Zombies.
I much prefer the Romero type zombies myself. Demon possessed zombies like they were in Savage Land, which we both really enjoyed. Those get a pass because they're a little bit different. The virus zombies, though, I mean, just like George did or some take on them, is always going to be my preference because that makes more sense to me.
Yeah, I like virus zombies.
Even the cordyceps zombies that are in, which we also didn't cover this season, in The Last of Us. That's still tangential to virus zombies. It's still something controlling the brain, you know, control animating. So anything like that, I think is better because it just kind of makes more sense than the, like you said, the parasite zombies, although they're along the spectrum, but they're a little bit much.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say before zombie season's completely over with, because this is the season you've had to endure the most to get through. So
I would like this season to die and to stay dead, but it won't. It will be back.
It will be back.
I think this season has made me actually less afraid of zombies. My dreams have not been as horrific in terms of dealing with zombies. So if anything, ghost season has messed with my dreams more than anything. Because I feel like I see those kinds of dead people versus the zombie dead people.
Zombies will always be probably my favorite horror genre. Even though ghosts are basically the ones that scare me the most, zombies is always going to be my favorite just because it really was Return of the Living Dead that got me into horror movies. Yeah. Flat out. Like, it is the movie that got me into them. If I hadn't been as scared by a movie as I was watching Return of the Living Dead at like age 11,
yeah,
I would have never chased that dragon, as it were, to get scared and watching horror movies. So that it always goes back to, you know, a zombie movie. Yeah. Tom Savini recently revealed that there is a company coming out next year with a version of his Night of the Living Dead remake, the colorized version that we covered, the 1990 remake, that's going to have 60% of what he originally intended to have in the movie restored. So it's going to have more gore. It's going to have more scenes. It's going to be the definitive director's cut whenever it comes out, and it comes out next year.
I like it.
I can't wait to see what they add back into it. So
yeah, I still can't believe the original Night of the Living Dead was my introduction to zombies that scared the fuck out of me. Actually, I think it was 1991?
It was 1990, 91, somewhere in that range. Yeah,
I think it might have been that one. I'm not sure, but all I know is that those movies horrified me, and I still feel like zombies are a possibility. We talked about blue tongue disease in animals right now. Yep. I really do think that zombies is a possibility. Do I think it's going to be a huge-ass apocalypse? No. But
it depends on the type of zombie. Yeah. If they run, we're fucked. If they're Romero zombies, it'd be funny. I mean, you'd never have proof of this. Tangent too. If there's actually such thing as the multi-universe or, you know, multiverse theory, which there's a lot of scientific proof out there that it actually is a thing. You know, they've observed like particles in different, you know, states of being, implying different universes parallel to one another.
Yeah.
I think it would be hilarious if we're the one multiverse that escapes a zombie apocalypse that destroys us because George warned us about it before it ever happened.
Oh, that'd be messed the fuck up.
Like, we were prepared for it because he educated us enough to where we wouldn't get destroyed by it.
I mean, I feel like Max Brooks and his zombie survival guide also is a good preparation tool. If you guys are like me and you believe in zombies, or you believe that it's a possibility, I think the Reverend also is kind of on that train a little bit too. Get Max Brooks, the guide to surviving the zombie apocalypse. Zombie survival guide, right?
Zombie survival guide. Yeah.
Get that book. But
The thing is, that book wouldn't exist, though, without George. Because he even says in it that it's based upon Night of the Living Dead and those type movies.
It is.
So, I mean, regardless of it, it all goes back to George has prepared us to be the one situation where, you know, we should be able to fight this off if we can fight it off, you know.
Yeah. So, I'm glad the season's over.
I always love these movies, though, going back and watching them. So it was a good season for me. I don't know. We've already discussed it. We might alter what we do for when bad animals go bad, because I don't think either one of us can survive that season if we just do evil animals, honestly.
Exactly.
I think we
need to get into a little bit more.
We're going to have to work in werewolves. We're going to have to maybe even work in something else.
Possibly mutants.
I just thought about something. There's a few movies about cat people that we could work in.
Yes, like, I was literally just thinking cats right now.
Yeah, like there's two different movies, one in black and white, and which, I mean, whatever. But there's one that came out in like the 80s or /90s called Cat People. And then there's Stephen King's Sleepwalkers, which is about people who mutate into cats. Yep. So I think we're going to have to throw in shit like that. We can't just do animals.
I agree. But they are still animals. They're just...
They are. They're just... They're anthropomorphic. Hey, another movie I forgot about. Was it The Island of Dr. Moreau?
Oh, shit. Yeah. Because
that is about animal people.
Oh, fucking A. That'll be a good one.
And that movie's got a lot of history behind it, too, because that movie had a fucking miserable, like, production and everything. So.
Yeah.
We might be working in anthropomorphic animals. We might even work in Congo and shit like that. So.
I was okay with that. I was always okay with that. So it wasn't just pure animals. But yeah, I think we need to dump not our whole list, but we need to dump some of the fillers we put in on our list.
Yeah.
And go with some of, we need to start throwing in the werewolf stuff, because I was thinking about it and I was like, fuck, I don't know that I want to go through with when bad animals go bad right now. I wasn't feeling it. And then that's when the Hubs was like, oh, you know, you should do this and this and this. And I'm like, well, those aren't animals. Because, like, why not? Why not?
I mean, Ginger Snaps. I mean, those are some good fucking movies. That'd be a good one to work in there. They're werewolf movies, technically.
Oh, shit. I didn't even think. I've never seen Ginger Snaps, so I wouldn't have known. And we can do that. You've been wanting to. You talk about Ginger Snaps all the time. Like, might as well.
Yeah, I mean, you'll appreciate the subtle, it's actually a more subtle than George, at least, in this movie, subtle connection between a woman getting her period for the first time and changing into an unstoppable raging beast. Mm-hmm. That's literally what Ginger Snaps is about. I'm not even lying.
The new moon party, you know? I should have threw one for my daughter. That would have been hilarious. Just throw her a period party.
But anyways, folks, it's been enjoyable. Hope you enjoyed the zombie season and hope you join us next season. Cause I know at least some of the people I know personally, we're going to duck out for just animals, but with werewolves, you might come back. So yeah,
Cody.
All right. Yeah, Cody. Anyways, folks, with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.